When you started saying, I thought you meant ushers in a church. It took me a second to even figure out what you were saying. I'm like, ushers, numbers. And then I realized you were talking about some notes. And I was like, ushers. What ushers numbers? And why do ushers have numbers? And no, I don't know of him.
He has Daniel at the first chapter at 607 BC.
Yeah.
And then chapter 3 is 580. And in Ezekiel, he has Ezekiel chapter 14 at 594. And it's where
Yeah.
Contemporaries. But if Usher's numbers are right, somewhere between the time
Daniel would have been very well known it early on.
But he was still a young guy.
Yeah. Of course, if you have, you know, I mean, let's more, you know, I mean, if you use the, you know, say if you use, well, even that date that he gave, whatever the captivity, say 605 or whatever he gave there, 603. You know, say he went to, you know, quote, to the college for 2 or 3 years, and then let's say they actually completed the King's College before the dream situation occurred, but it occurred quickly, let's say. Well, then that would be, you know, 602 or 600, depending on which one of those starting dates, that Daniel is, he's in charge of Babylon.
Right, but it's not only that, but from what Ezekiel's saying, at this point, he's also putting Daniel in the same category as Noah.
Well, I mean, you think about that at that point, though, in Ezekiel's world, you know, with that Israel is in great decline and, you know, just a, you know, kind of a, you know, a shell of what it was. And yet Daniel is known throughout the world as, well, not exactly you'd say throughout the world, but definitely throughout their world as the best news could have traveled. Not now, well, news traveled in that captivity, but assuming it traveled somewhat, Daniel's, you know, basically second in charge of Babylon, and it's, you know, his God is the revealer of mysteries. Daniel would be pretty well thought of, I guess. But that does seem very soon. I agree with you.
Yeah, and it just you know, I've read over this, I don't know how many times, and it's like, wow, the Lord is really putting a high premium on Noah, on Daniel, and on Job.
Mm-hmm. Where's that at in Ezekiel?
It's 14.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But then when I looked at Usher's numbers on it, it was like, well, Daniel, at best, was still in his 40s.
Yeah.
And for God to say, put him on the plane with these two great men, it's like, wow, that's quite
well, not necessarily. Did they even know each other? Would they have ever had reason? And you know, the thing is, you don't know given Daniel's position, and that kind of comes into the three buddies, their situation is, why is Daniel not involved in that? Did they just leave Daniel out conveniently because we know not to mess around with Daniel, he's too high ranked. And they just brought the charges against the other three. That just doesn't seem to make sense to me. But that's a possibility. The other one is he's just not around because he's on the king's business. So if he's on the king's business and he traveled, then he may have actually, you know, could have come into contact with Ezekiel there. But which chapter, which word you say it was? I know you told me twice. 14 what? I guess the other okay, look at his notes, and does he give a time of writing of Daniel and Ezekiel? See, it seems like, yeah, it almost seems like Daniel has to be written last because of that, but that'd be the one possibility I was thinking. Daniel, that's interesting. I find it very fascinating because, I mean, Daniel's chronology, because we tend not to focus on his chronology because of the, you know, when books are so succinct like that, and you're just going along and you don't, I mean, you have chronological indicators, but they're not right there in front of you. It's not like year one, year two that you can follow. When you start naming it, you know, with a certain year of the king, well, you can follow that. But then when you change kings and you're not really sure when that is. Yeah, and you know, so you've got your strip bench. So if you have, you know, if we say Daniel's, you know, whatever, 16, say he's 16 years old, and he goes there, and that, you know, the first dream occurs quickly, let's say within 3 years. He's 19, 20 years old. When does the other dream occur? When does Nebuchadnezzar go nuts? Is it soon? Is it late? It's, you know, I mean, logically, which doesn't get us anywhere, you know, when we start arguing our logic with God from silence, doesn't get you too far. But it seems like it would have been earlier than later in Nebuchadnezzar's life because of the purpose of it. But yet, you're still arguing from silence, and that didn't get you anywhere. But assuming that it's early, and let's say it happened within a couple of years, then, you know, then that's at your, say, 30. Daniel's 30 years old when Nebuchadnezzar's come out of his insanity. And so he has those years, you know, following that, several years following that with Nebuchadnezzar in a more positive, you know, depending on, it's more positive regardless, you know, if you see it as being extremely positive, you know, that he's, quote, a believer, then it's, you know, he's got, you know, a relationship with somebody that actually is worshiping Yahweh for the last several years of his life. And Daniel is, you know, 30 years old. And yet, you know, and if that's the case, then when he's 30 years old until he's 80 years old, we have no account. 50 years, and you know nothing of Daniel. And you know, it's just amazing. Because, you know, when you think about it, and if you go look through a lot of, you know, children's stuff, when, you know, Daniel's in the lion's den, give him a sword, he's going to beat up those lions. You know, I mean, he's a virile 20-year-old warrior, you know. He's not an 85-year-old guy. It's just not the pictures we have, you know, because of things. And when you start putting that, I remember when the first time I did it, you start putting that chronology, you go, wait a minute, he's not 18 years old. This guy's 80 years old. And, you know, it's just, it is so intriguing, but yeah. So, I mean, I could see that Daniel was, we know after the Nebuchadnezzar insanity thing, that proclamation was, the way it's written in the Bible, was like a worldwide proclamation. And so at that point, Ezekiel, even by itself, Ezekiel surely would have been aware of Daniel's influence on Nebuchadnezzar. But if you go back to the first one, yeah, he would have been possibly 20 years old, isn't it? And you're going, hey, this guy is, you know, our nation is, really, you know, if you look at that, let's see. So if you took it at 605, Daniel goes into captivity. And within, let's say, 5 years, Daniel's second in control of Babylon, or of the city of Babylon, at least however that's worded there. I mean, he's the, which seems to be maybe not in second in control of the kingdom, but second in control of the city, which is a long ways to be in second in control of the kingdom. And the nation doesn't fall for another 3 years after that. Or really another, you know, that's the second 597, and then 586. I mean, Daniel is well established before the total destruction. And of course, you could argue, well, then would the total destruction of Israel have occurred if Nebuchadnezzar had already, you know, had his epiphany? Perhaps not, but then perhaps yes, because they're still being disobedient, you know. But it could be that judgment upon him, because even though they're wrong, you know, that way. But either way, you could have Daniel well established in an influential position along, you know, while Ezekiel is going around saying doom's coming because you guys won't straighten up. And then at the same time, he's going, you know, and if Ezekiel's got the insight, which, I mean, we know he does inspirationally, let's say, apart from that, which is always a question. I mean, you know, how much do these guys understand on their own or able to put together, you know? But, you know, was Ezekiel able to look around and say, look what God's doing? I mean, this is coming to an end. You know, I mean, I can see it. God's directing me. This is coming to an end if we don't repent. But at the same time, look what he's doing over here. He's preparing something for the future, because look what he's done with Dan. And who could, and who, how could you ever explain that, you know, that you go conquer Babylon, I mean, go conquer Jerusalem, but yet you take kids out of Jerusalem, and then they start to rise into positions of influence over there. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's a very intriguing.
I see it as, you know, for the Jew, his whole world is just shaken to the core.
Yep.
And Jeremiah has all these prophecies. And Ezekiel is starting, and Ezekiel is an older man, it appears. And I would, when your whole world is shaken, look for anything that has anything solid, anything that you the Spirit is utters this thing twice that's putting Daniel on the same level with Job and Noah. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. See, I mean, Daniel's one of those characters that, and I mean, you know, really scripturally, I mean, you know, David is the only person, David is the only one that we really have a pretty good glimpse of his life. And it just doesn't seem that way when you read the Bible or talk about the Bible. We get these feelings of, you know, now we have quite a bit with Moses, but we have huge gaps. So we really, it's the latter third with Moses. We have a little glimpse when he's young, and it's really that last third that we know that we have of Moses. We don't really know much about the other. But you think of Daniel. I mean, we have, like three events in his life? That's Daniel. Four events if you count the two dreams. I guess you got four events in Daniel's life. And two of them surely occurred very, early. One definitely early. I think two of them at least early. One somewhere in the middle. And then the other two that, I guess you got two events, but both of them are very late. And, the handwriting wall, and those are real late. So you got two events real early, two events very late, and one, somewhere in the middle of where, how much in the middle, I don't know, but that's a, and if you go from age 20 to age 80, you got 60 years, and two events occurred when he's 20, two events occurred when he's 80, and you got one event somewhere in between. We know nothing of this guy's life, except we know how he started and we know how he ended, and we can make some assumptions, therefore, what that middle was like.
So, do you think then that the prophecy of the 70 years, and that took place when he was fasting, and he was in the midst of fasting? Mm-hmm. You think that was the end?
Well, yeah, you do have some of those when you come back in because of that. That seems to be toward, I would say it's toward the end, because of, isn't that his whole connection, is he's looking at, this 70-year concept, and that's what gets him into it. So it would therefore have to be at the end, though it would be, which Daniel is kind of interesting, because we have those first six chapters that are kind of chronological, and then we start throwing stuff back in and totally goof up our whole mindset, because we like everything chronological. But you have a narrative that's, the first half is narrative, and then you have the last half, which isn't narrative, but prophetic, that comes back in. And but it's, Daniel's a, there are some just fabulous, Daniel's one of those, there's nothing negative about Daniel, scripturally, and Joseph, and there's nothing negative. Well, you have to make up. I've read some people that they make up. I think they create something negative. They go, when he told his dream to his brothers and father while he was being a show off, and I'm like, hey, if you want to create a negative, you can create that. But there's nothing in the passage that suggests that's negative, right? And and that's also one of those things like, and you could almost see that from our society, somebody saying that, because that's the way we evaluate things anymore, is reactive. If I say something, 999 people could agree that it's harmless, but if one person got upset about it, then you're wrong for saying it, because it's we're reactive, that becomes the whole standard becomes how somebody felt. So that's almost how I evaluate when I read that about people saying he shouldn't have said it. It's like, you're just trying to create. There's nothing in the text to suggest, Now, there is a little bit to suggest. I could, some of the naming of his children might suggest that, I guess you could go there. He talks about, just his bitterness and forgiveness and all that. But there's, yeah, but you have a long life with Joseph, and it, once again, you just pass over this. 3 years in prison,
you know, you're reading through that chapter, you know, okay, three years in prison, then you go, wait a minute, what was I doing 3 years ago? Whoa, that's a long time to spend in prison. You know, you know, for something you didn't do, or for being virtuous, you know, that's even worse. I mean, you know, it'd be one thing to be arrested for something you did not do. It's another thing to be arrested for, I'd lie about the good thing you did do. It'd be easier to be in jail for something you just simply didn't do than it would be that somebody lied about the good thing you did do. And, you know, and so, hey, yeah, those kinds of things are just incredible, isn't it? You know, I guess we have a lot, you know, with Elijah, we have quite a bit of time with Elijah. But you don't know where he came. You know, he just he's there. Elijah's on the scene. You know, just he's there. You know, so John the Baptist, which is an interesting, you know, comparison with John the Baptist and Elijah. You know, because of their prophetic roles, that are some of the terminology that's used in the New Testament that brings them together. But then when you look at their lives, we know where John the Baptist came from, but past his birth, John and Elijah are similar, and they just appear and they come out of nowhere. Man, this real is a lot of intriguing things. You know, just, can you imagine what the Bible, and if you thought of the Bible in a, you know, more of a, well, if you would, just, I guess, you know, history. You know, just, I mean, just the, you know, just the people we have, if you're given not an in-depth history, but you know, even a cursory history of their life, you know, chronologically just flowing of their life, the volume we would have. And, you know, God's going, that's not the point. Evidently, that's what he's saying. You know, when we get there, you're missing the point. I'm not talking about what he did. I'm talking about what I did. And we go, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Well, it's 6 months. Yeah. Well, we know he's pretty high, you know, prior to that. And was he the one that, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's part of the prophecy that Daniel tells him, you know, with that band and all that, that, you know, the stump, your kingdom will survive. So there's no, and which is most intriguing because from a human perspective, there's no way that kingdom survives. I mean, you just read through Kings, all the, you know, you see a weakness, I want to be king, whack, you know. People are going to assassinate strong kings, and you get a weak guy, you know, they'd wipe him out, wipe his whole family out, and take over. Or, as you were saying, just the people that came into power wouldn't want him to, you know, when that hurt, he was regaining his senses, say, wait a minute, I don't want to give this up. So that, you know, that's one of those things, is how do you even explain, apart from divine intervention, how could you explain that being held together? So, but who held it together? I mean, was there a central person? Did God do it through like a Daniel? Yeah. Well, the shield. But that thing, it doesn't mention anything. You know, it doesn't. You know, once again, see, we want to know that information, but when you look at that passage, any details about all that deflects from the point that God was about making Nebuchadnezzar recognize that God was God. And anything else is deflecting of that point. And, you know, and God's, you know, so once again, you know what I mean? And I don't think it's inappropriate to talk about the Bible, you know, the Old Testament being history, because it is history. But on the other hand, the Bible isn't about those people. The Bible's about God. And, you know, and that's hard to keep in focus in, you know, one sense, because we're, you know, Daniel, you know, David fought the giant, and David did this, David did this, you know, Joseph did this. You know, it's all through these people, but it's really a revelation of God being revealed through those various relationships.
And David says that. He says, when he's getting ready to fight Goliath, he says, the Lord delivered the bear. The Lord delivered the lion. What's his son circumcised Philistine?
And where does a 16, you know, whatever Daniel was, or David was, where does a 16-year-old kid come up with that? You know, where does he come up with that type of whole presence? I mean, where do you stand there in front of a whole army, and they're warriors, and you're not. Even though, I mean, he, you know, had various things, but he definitely wasn't in the same class they were. And to say, how can you let that uncircumcised Philistines insult our God? I mean, that, you know, that's quote, not natural. But even at that point, I mean, and I agree with that, but there's somewhere where you get the intermingling, if you would, and that's probably not a good theological terminology, of this person empowered by the Holy Spirit, and where you really at some point cannot say simply, this is David speaking, but it's David being empowered by the Spirit. And we don't have, or I don't anyway, any clear understanding of that concept that you know, really gels, you know, that makes it work. And so you know, because we always want to talk about natural and supernatural and whatever, but, in you know, so in essence, with those kinds of situations, they're not purely natural or purely supernatural. It's that those two embody together as the Holy Spirit empowers somebody and dwells. And so there's no way Daniel or David, in my opinion, there's no way David on his own comes up there and does that. And yet it's natural in that setting, because he's, as you said, he's a guy that somehow at that point, even though he's very young and inexperienced in certain realms, was very experienced in a relationship with God already, and could be an instrument of God.
And it seems that his men, you know, when it talks about his mighty men, it seems that it also inspired them. Because, you know, he says one day, oh, if only I could help it drink at the brook. And so two of his men break through, get a bottle of water, and bring it back. You know?
Yeah, because they're at risk their lives, you know? Couple of things you might want to avoid there: slippery slopes and being trapped.
Yeah, and then the one that, you know, one day it says that he decided today he was going to defend the lentil field. And how many did he kill? He stood in the lentil field and slew, I don't remember how many, but all these things that these extraordinary feats that these men did, and it seems that a lot of it was because he was in
And then you have David, on the other hand, where, you know, when kings go out to war, you know, that could just be a timing thing. I mean, it's the spring, but that, it just seems too strong to suggest that he wasn't where he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And not just simply it was the time of the year, but he wasn't where he's supposed to be. And it's the opposite of those other stories. This is somebody not empowered.
Like he got complacent.
Just not empowered.
Somewhere.
Yeah. So it's
But yeah, I mean, the Bible is incredibly fascinating.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's fascinating in ways that, you know, like you said, when we talk about this, like tonight, you know, we're talking about these little aspects that are fascinating that you don't typically read about. You know, it's not in the highlights of something you read about why the Bible is fascinating, because it's not in talking about its literature or time. But you just have these things and all these questions. And yet, somehow the questions become meaningless in light of another scope, you know. So, well, that was a great discussion. Very much a deliverance from God, because